This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. This Sunday night, for the 88th time, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences will present their annual Academy Awards to those who made significant contributions to movies and to those who are considered the best in their field this year. But this year's Oscars are troubling to many because for the second year in a row, all of the nominees in the actor and actress categories are white. Despite a number of significant movies featuring star-turned performances from African Americans, none made the cut. Some black actors have reacted to this slight by cutting the Oscars from their plans, their boycotting. It has also called into question the methodology used to choose the nominees and whether or not the apparent racial bias is intentional or something that speaks to some systemic problem within the Academy itself. Today we spend time talking about that before we move on to our annual handicapping of potential winners and losers at Sunday night's ceremony. We are joined by Matt Brunson, film reviewer for Creative Loafing, and Sean O'Connell, movie content director for CinemaBlend.com and movie reviewer for NBC6, WCNC TV. Welcome back, guys.
Bonjour.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Good to see you. Thank you for being here. And for the first part of the program, we've invited Charlotte Observer editorial writer Eric Frazier to be with us. He wrote an op-ed piece about the all-white Oscars that appeared in the paper recently. Good to see you again.
Good to be here.
You're getting to be a regular, aren't you? Are we paying you? The Oscars broke the color barrier. Oscars broke the color barrier about 60 years ago. A few years back, we began to see more and more African-American actors and actresses nominated, etc. The last 2 years, however, have gone to all white actors. What can this mean?
Well, that's I guess the question of the moment. Why there's so much controversy? I think that it does speak to a larger sort of systemic problem, both in terms of which movies get made, which actors get cast, and also, you know, who's deciding, you know, which movies merit the awards and the recognition. There's just a big problem in Hollywood, at least as far as I can tell, in terms of diversity and inclusion. And it's kind of ironic because, you know, as we all know, Hollywood is a place that is seen as being, you know, overwhelmingly liberal, progressive. But I think underneath that sort of creative top layer, you have a business, dollars and cents, you know, deals that are made or not made based on very conservative calculus in terms of what's the safest bet that will make the most money.
Is Hollywood liberal or is that just a canard?
No, I think it's still a very liberal industry in town.
Well, yeah, I mean, to a degree. I always hear that it's such a liberal town, and then all I see are, you know, all these right-wing stars like Schwarzenegger and Stallone and all that. So I think it really goes both ways. They like to be liberal in a more social way, but behind the scenes, I think they're more conservative in a lot of their tastes.
Yeah. Is that because they think that middle America wants them to be that way, that middle America won't buy tickets, the flyover part of the country won't buy tickets if they don't carefully craft movies to their taste?
Well, I think every film studio has a slate that tries to tick off as many boxes as possible. And so when you see a film like An American Sniper connect with a huge audience, you know, is that an exception that proves the rule, or would that film have been made anyway? I mean, they're always going to have, for now, we're always going to have filmmakers like Clint Eastwood who are going to tell the types of stories that he wants to tell. At the same time, I think that the other side of the equation is also being answered by films that aren't getting quite as much recognition as people expected. I think coming into this award ceremony, a film that's being talked about often as being Oscar worthy almost, but then overlooked, was Straight Outta Compton. And so, you know, the film was made and was very successful, but then it's hard to really point to why didn't the Academy respond to it? How come they didn't back it?
Did it surprise any of you, particularly the two reviewers here, did it surprise you that there are no black nominees in the actor-actress categories?
I'd say the only mild surprise about it is just Idris Elba for Beasts of No Nation, just because he'd been nominated for like every award under the sun. And then when it came around to Oscar time, it was a no-show. I'm not as surprised overall, though. I mean, the Academy membership is like 92% white, and they do, you know, they're going to vote for stuff that reflects their own world. Rod Lurie, a writer-director, that this is very anecdotal, but he said that he like met with three Academy members, three or four, in a deli, saw somewhere like four 70-year-old white men, and he asked them about Compton because he thought it was a great movie, and he said three of them said they didn't even bother to look at the screener, and one of them said he put it on, but it was too loud, so he took it off. So I think – so what the Academy has done is they've now instigated a rule that you have to have been working in film in I think the last 10 years yeah. to be considered voting worthy, and I think it's a good idea. I think they rushed it, though, so that's it wasn't really ironed out, and that's why there's a lot of controversy around the Band-Aid.
In your op-ed piece, Derek, you said that I'm trying to find it, that the Oscars and movies in general reflect the zeitgeist of the American public. And since most Americans happen to be white, that's what the awards generally reflect. But not always. So
not
why
always.
The last 2 years and not other years?
Well, I tend to think that that's kind of a just a random to some extent. This when you talk about just the last 2 years, I think that's just kind of the way the chips have fallen here in terms of which movies got made and which actors wound up in the sort of powerful star roles. And I guess I think that's piece of it, but another piece of it is just that there are so few opportunities for actors of color. That, you know, you're going to have, when there are so few opportunities, there are going to be these periods where you just don't see them on the podium, and so to speak.
You guys mentioned Straight Outta Compton. You mentioned Idris Elba. Who else, what other movies, what other actors should have been, in your opinion, nominated?
See, that's why I think this is a bad year. Not that it's a bad year, but it's an awkward year to go into this conversation, because I didn't feel like there was one film in particular that was snubbed. Last year, Selma seemed like it should have received a lot more attention in the awards race. And so I think the conversation almost started that year.
Yeah,
and then
true.
This year, when the nominations were announced, there, like I said, there wasn't a film where I was like, well, if this gets overlooked, then it's a really big problem. But when you did, I'll definitely admit, when I looked at like the best actor, best actress category, I was like, ooh, that does. Yeah, it looks really well. And then the only example that I think people are pointing out too is Creed, which was made by an African-American director and, right. and has a young African-American star. And I'm not saying that I thought Michael B. Jordan deserved a nomination, but when they only nominate Sylvester Stallone
yeah,
this.
Ed Compton, the only nomination it got was for its four white screenwriters.
Right. And, so, and that looks bad.
So the Saturday this Night, is a, the Saturday this is a Night
pattern.
Life.
This is a pattern that happens. You mm-hmm. know, if you think back all the way to Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing,
yeah.
who got nominated? Danny Aiello.
Right. But when Jada Pinkett Smith is like, well, we're going to boycott, you know, I don't think that her husband deserved a nomination for Concussion. And so it's easy for them to be like, well, we're not going to go this year. It's like, well, you probably weren't going to get invited anyway.
If I can add to what Eric said, though, I think a lot of it, too, is what films, the topics. Like if 12 Years a Slave had been put out this year, I think it would have gotten nominated because mm-hmm. it had like a social relevance. Same with movies like maybe Ray, about a very beloved figure. This year we had movies that were more about the African-American experience to which white Hollywood could not relate, which would be like Straight Outta Compton or Creed.
Eric, you said something like that in your article. You said that nominated films generally reflect the films that mirror – that best mirror the world as seen through the mm-hmm. eyes of white folks, which means Straight Outta Compton is going to have some problems getting
yeah.
nominated because they just don't get it.
Yeah.
That's not their milieu.
Yeah.
However, if that holds true, what about Slumdog Millionaire? That's a Best Picture Award winner. Most of us don't have that experience. What about 12 Years a Slave?
I mean, that's not to say that there won't be times when that happens, where you have a movie that's, you know, sort of
So these are aberrations?
I think so, yeah.
Well,
from my perspective, I see it that way.
I also just see the Academy in general over the past 10 years as just being very reactionary to what happens. More blockbusters are coming out and people are upset that the films that they really enjoy going to aren't being recognized. So the Academy expands their Best Picture field to 10 films. Now, you know, are you letting in five truly worthy films, or are you just saying, oh, well, we need to bring so much of this, Mike, and you know this.
Mm-hmm.
It's driven towards increasing the viewership of the show. It's all about the television
product.
But
then they botched that when they went from 10, which gave you a real good slate, right, to just however many gets
nominated.
We're
going to talk about that later on. I promise you there. This is an odd year for them to have Chris Rock as the – it's probably fortunate that they have him.
Perfect.
It's a great year for Chris
Rock. But I mean, you know he's going to excoriate them.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've already seen a promo for this. It's on their website. It's on the Oscar website. You've got Chris Rock standing there in a tuxedo, and he pours baby powder into his hand, which, of course, is white. And then he claps his hands, and he says, "Let's get on with it." he's primed.
Great.
He's ready to go.
Great.
But behind the scenes, I'm not saying that they are thrilled, but again, it's driving viewers to their show. It's all about the television show.
Yeah. Well, now, explain to me how Straight Outta Compton, which can be argued that the elderly Academy voter may not quite get into because it's not what they're accustomed to and that they don't understand that world, why would they look at that movie and then nominate the white screenwriters?
That's a great question.
Well, question. There you are.
It's because each branch nominates, you know, within its own branch. Like writers nominate writers, directors nominate directors. And if you look historically, the directors and the writers branches are by far the most maverick groups. They will nominate stuff like David Lynch. You know, Blue Velvet's only nomination was for directing. Last Temptation of Christ, only direction was for Scorsese directing. And same on the writer side. There are a lot of scripts that don't get any other nominations, but since they tend to think more outside the box, it's up for that.
A recently released study by the Media Diversity and Social Change Initiative at the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communications and Journalism gave a failing grade to every movie studio and most TV makers, saying that film and TV produced by these companies are whitewashed and that an epidemic, this is a quote, epidemic of invisibility runs top to bottom through the industry for women, minorities, and LGBT people. They say the Oscars don't have a diversity problem. They have an inclusion crisis.
I think that's true, yeah. I mean, I think they do have a very large problem. And to their credit, they seem to realize that this is a problem that can affect the main thing that they care about, which is the bottom line. And there you see them sort of reacting and the Academy broadening its membership.
You say to their credit, but would they have said a darn thing about this if Jada Pinkett Smith hadn't launched this campaign to boycott the Oscars? Would they have come out?
That's a fair question.
And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the head of the Academy is an African-American woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does that strike you as odd, that it took this for her to come out and say, we're going to launch a major investigation and change process?
I mean, it does look like it was, you know, panicky, reactive, to a budding controversy with major stars like Jada Pinkett Smith.
So was she just putting up with it?
I think she did the right thing, but probably for the wrong, reason. I mean, the motives weren't purely, affirmative, I'm going to jump in here and do the right thing.
Well, if the buck stops there, is it her fault? If she didn't?
Well, I think it's bigger than just her, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm an old movie buff. I watch Turner Classic Movies all the time. And me and my wife are always watching, and the roles that the black characters have, their servants and Pullman porters and that kind of thing in the old movies, and you just kind of roll your eyes and you're like, oh, God. And you look now and you see more. You can see progress, but there's still a long way
to go. You're watching Turner Classic Movies. You're living in the 40s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Times have changed, Eric.
Those were painful times.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment, and we'll handicap the Oscars as well. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Union Presbyterian Seminary's Charlotte campus, offering weekend Master of Divinity and Christian Education degrees. Enrollment information for a day for discernment, March 12th or April 23rd, available at upsem.edu/admissions. And Henderson Properties, providing real estate sales and property management throughout the entire Charlotte region for over 25 years. HendersonProperties.com. Well, we know that college sports bring big money in for lots of schools and can be a boon to their bottom line, but who pays the tab for these expensive programs? At a lot of institutions, student fees largely subsidize athletics, and we're talking big money here, about $10 billion in student fees in the last 5 years. So, are students getting a return on their investment? We talk about that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Apple says unlocking the San Bernardino shooter's iPhone would set a dangerous precedent. The FBI says new encryption technologies harm efforts to solve crimes. The escalating fight over privacy and national security.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's our annual Oscar show with a twist this year. We'll get to the nominees in all the major categories and get our critics' picks for who they think should and will win. Matt Brunson is here, the film reviewer for Creative Loafing. Sean O'Connell, our movie content director for CinemaBlend.com and a reviewer for NBC6, WCNC-TV. Eric Fraser has joined us for this edition. He's an editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer, who's also a movie buff and who wrote an op-ed piece about the all-white Oscars, which has a hashtag this year, hashtag Oscars So White, which I believe started last year. And we mentioned that Annenberg study that said film and TV producers are woefully inadequate in their representation of women, minorities, and LGBT people. And you pointed out, I think, in your article, Eric, that it isn't only black actors who get the shaft. I mean, it's been 58 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Since an Asian actress won an Oscar, and no Latina has won in 54 years. I can't even name, outside of Lucy Liu, who's on television, I can't name an Asian actress.
Yeah.
And I don't see them at all.
Yeah. And it's this, I think it's this same sort of, you know, narrow funnel that Hollywood tends to try to pour its content through, and unnecessarily narrow, but it's the most... It's the safest, least risky path to go in terms of getting return on investment when you invest in your movies and television shows.
Well, it's also a very narrow prism that we're talking about for Hollywood specifically. There's a huge Asian film market with massive, like, global Asian stars that some of the studios are trying to tap into by, you know, casting them in their tent poles. Disney in particular, the Marvel franchises, the Star Wars franchises, are trying to pluck some of these extremely popular and very powerful Asian actors. So they have there is a global cinema that the Oscars don't pay attention to.
Right. How successful do you think, or how important do you think, this boycott is going to be? First of all, are black actors and workers in the industry going to not be at the Oscars en masse?
I don't know how well it'll do, because I've seen a lot of opinions from within the black community saying that a boycott's not the way to go. Mm-hmm. That
and you
if,
said that.
If anything,
yeah,
you know,
I don't
they
really
should be there to represent. So I think more just the fact that it's been talked about so much and written about so much will actually do maybe more good than an actual
because
boycott.
Because Oscar presenters will include, according to the Oscars, Common, Morgan Freeman, The Weeknd, Pharrell Williams, and Quincy Jones, who is rumored to have agreed to appear if he could spend 5 minutes on television talking about diversity. I don't know whether they're going to give him the 5 minutes, but he's supposed to be there. Why did these people decide to appear in the face of this boycott?
Well, yeah, it never seemed to me like it was a really, you know, hard and fast organized effort. It was kind of Jada Pinkett Smith and a couple other people just saying that they personally were going to do that. And I think she was making it clear that she wasn't trying to tell anybody else what to do, but that was her personal choice. And so I think that is kind of the way it has unfolded.
Is her husband coming?
I don't know, but probably not.
But in general, the show, the ratings of the show reflect people tuning in to support a movie that they enjoy year after year. And so, you know, the people who are going to attend primarily are there because, A, they've been nominated or they're part of an ensemble of supporting a nominee. So I don't think that's going to change. I think the ratings for the first half hour to see Chris Rock are going to be the highest you've ever seen. And then after that, it'll probably tail off, as it does almost every year. I imagine the telecast always opens strong and then tails off.
So because it does get a little boring.
Oh, it's interminable.
Well, that's let's talk about that for a second, because when the Oscars were just the Oscars, when it was just the Academy Awards, and it was in black and white on your little 12-inch screen, that's when Hollywood was important, when these people were bigger than life, and to see them in your living room was something special. And that was also a more innocent time, when we really thought that if somebody was getting an Academy Award, oh my God, they must be
they're the best.
Fabulous.
Right.
Well, now we've seen how the sausage is made, and there's so many of these award shows, from the Golden Globes to the SAG Awards, et cetera, et cetera. Does it really matter? Does anybody care anymore, and particularly in the social media world, where my point of view is just as valid as anybody writing for the New York Times or voting in the Academy?
I mean, I don't think that saying something as an Oscar winner drives as much attention to a film as it used to. I don't think that, you know, the general public is going to go out and support something just because it's been deemed an Oscar winner, which is unfortunate because there are some really good films, small films this year, films like Spotlight, like Brooklyn, that almost need that boost and don't quite get it as much as they used to.
But this is another example of seeing the sausage made. And when you see the sausage made, it's not a pretty thing. And it also shows you that these awards are subjective,
you know,
not
but that,
objective. It's not like a sports contest where the score tells everything. Mm-hmm. This is like ice skating.
But it's been this way since the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like one of the very
of
first
course, but
ceremonies.
But now we know it.
Huh?
Of course it was like that in the very beginning. But now we know it. We know. And this and something like this points out how subjective these things are and how it's not necessarily an accurate gauge of achievement.
No, it's never been. And it's also, too, like –
Well, then why watch?
It sort of takes away a little bit of the – like when people talk about Idris Elba and they're like, well, it's a racial reason why he didn't get nominated. Well, no, it's really because it's a Netflix studio. Like that particular film was backed by Netflix, which didn't have the advertising campaign to support a real push for him. Mm. And then you can also point to some of the actors, they just don't campaign quite as hard, you know? They don't think they have a chance, so they don't go to all of the luncheons. And you can follow that process through the entire awards campaign, which lasts for months. I mean, it starts in September and goes till February, essentially. So there are a lot of reasons behind the scenes of why certain things take off and don't take off. And you talk about seeing the sausage get made. I think everybody has access to that nowadays, through the trades and all the websites that cover all of this.
Which diminishes
the glitz. Like you said, sporting
event.
It's basically a sporting event in the sense that that's why people follow. It's just like arguing about the playoffs. You know, you're like, oh, is my favorite going to win? Well, this person sucks. Why is he going to win? Et cetera, et cetera. But what I think is funny is the very first Oscar ceremony lasted 5 minutes. Can you imagine if they booked the whole 3 hours on TV and said, here's your Oscar, here's your Oscar. Show's over. Everybody go.
Awesome. I would love that. That would be so great.
Time for more commercials. Dane on Twitter says, I think it may be time to push the old-timer white guys out and make the Academy more diverse, race and sex, because old white guys don't represent our actors and film community, and they don't represent our population as a whole. And in fact, the Academy has introduced a plan to improve Oscar diversity. You wrote, Sean, about their plans to, and I quote here, tighten up restrictions on who votes. What
they're
does that mean?
Well, they're trying to. It used to be, if you were involved in film in any capacity, it was unlimited, right? You were just in. You were an Academy member and you can vote. And now the one thing that they're trying to really change is you have to have been active working within the past 10 years. And so, you know, you're still going to have older white directors who are still making films.
Yeah, but they're still relevant to the conversation. It was like the actress Dolores Hart, who like is famous for giving Elvis his first screen kiss. She was only an actress till like the age of 25, and then she became a nun and has been in a convent forever. And she was really upset about this new directive that you have to, you know, still be in the industry, because she says, I like watching the movies, I like weighing in. I'm like, well, that's nice, but you've been in a convent for decades. How is that relevant to today's film scene?
And the Academy is planning to search the world over for potential new members who represent greater diversity. is that really necessary? Aren't they sitting out there in Hollywood right under their noses?
Yeah, I would think so.
That, to me, reeks of being reactionary. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, we're going to go out and find more people. No. There's talented, qualified people right in front of you. You don't have to scour the globe.
And in the old days, it was pretty much you're in Hollywood, you're a member. I mean, Buddy Hackett was an Academy member. Nothing against the sweet man, but come on, Buddy Hackett, you know, voting on the Best Picture of the Year.
I think also, too, it was like – and everybody automatically goes to, oh, it's senior citizens who are out of the industry now. But what if you were a child actor who happened to get nominated, or you know, you and then you haven't done anything in film forever? Why are you you voting on things? Why are you voting on things?
Okay, but let's end. We have to move on to actually handicapping the Oscars, but we'll end with this question from Josh on Twitter. Please recommend some good African American filmmakers.
Filmmakers.
His words, not mine. Spike Lee.
Well, Spike Lee would be one. The young lady who directed Selma.
Ava DuVernay. And she is leading the charge, too, for diversity and is a strong voice, especially on social media. My problem is she's so wrapped up in all of this, she hasn't made another film. I want her to get back to working because Selma was fantastic.
Should we look to television for that? Because a lot of stuff is happening in television and not necessarily on the big screen. Particularly on ABC, the woman in charge of How to Get Away with Murder and what's the other show? Empire, couple of others. I mean, that's replete with African American characters.
Well, there are filmmakers. I mean, you'd have to go back if you want, like Oscar Michaud, who was a groundbreaking filmmaker back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I think some of John Singleton's early movies, not necessarily lately, but early movies are worth looking at.
What's really funny, though, is these younger filmmakers, that Ryan Coogler, again, as an example, who made Fruitvale Station and then he made Creed this year, they're making films that are very important to them early when the budgets can stay low and they can voice their opinions and they can make the film that they want to make. And then they're getting snatched up to make tentpole blockbusters. Yeah, like Ryan Coogler is going to do Black Panther for Marvel. It's almost like, what do you want them to do? Do you want them to be the starving artists forever? Do you want them to get the studio gig? It's really a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it is.
We're going to move on to handicap some of the Oscars. You're welcome to stay, Eric Frazier, if you want to chime in with your opinion. If you need to go, you need to go. And I thank you for being here and to chime in on your op-ed piece on the Charlotte Observer, which people can still get on charlotteobserver.com. Thanks. Appreciate it. On to some predictions on the nominees. Let's start with Best Supporting Actress, Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight, Rooney Mara for Carol, Rachel McAdams, Spotlight, Alicia Vikander, The Danish Girl, and Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs. Before we talk about the nominees, I heard an interview with Kate Winslet about this Steve Jobs movie, which was shot in a really interesting way because Aaron Sorkin wrote the dialogue. Mm-hmm. It's rapid and it never stops.
Right.
And they wanted to make sure that they could get the rhythms of that down. So they rehearsed forever. And they would rehearse it in – it's a movie in three acts. So they would rehearse the acts and then shoot the first act and then go back and rehearse the second act for a couple of weeks. And they shot it all in sequence.
No, I believe it. Yeah. And that's Danny Boyle is the director. Uh-huh. And he shot on 16-millimeter film for the earliest stage of Steve Jobs' life and then 35-millimeter for the middle stage. And then he shot digital for the end, too. It's a visual gag that probably only a few people pick up on. But it's really, really neat to see. This is another category. Almost all of these categories, I think we're going to realize, is almost all five of the people deserve to be in the conversation, which is part of why with this whole controversy, it's like, well, almost in almost all the categories, who would you kick out kind of, you know, to replace with someone to meet a need? So,
and I think this is the only category that the two of you agree on, both who should win and who will win. It's the same answer. And that answer is
Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl. Now, my big beef this season has been category fraud, which is where the studios push lead performances in supporting categories to better their chances. And this year, we're seeing it with two people, with Alicia Vikander, who has just as much screen time as Eddie Redmayne, who's up for lead, and Rooney Mara for Carol, who is more screen time than Kate Blanchett, who's up for lead. Both of these actresses should be in lead, but I'm not going to fault Alicia for that.
And you called that what?
fraud? A category fraud.
Category fraud.
Yeah.
Is that something that's relatively new?
No, they've been doing it
since
the 50s, yeah.
And because if they pushed Rooney Mara into Best Actress category where she belongs, she'd compete against her co-star. And then why would the studio want to split their chances of potentially winning? So put her in Supporting Actress and maybe they can win both categories.
Is that why, and I've forgotten the movie, the Golden Globes, or a movie that I don't think is funny, was nominated as
The Martian.
Comedy. Yeah, that's not – no. There were moments of humor in it, but it's not a comedy.
No, but Fox, who has The Revenant and The Martian, wants to win in comedy and drama. So, and it worked to their favor because they did. They won comedy for The Martian and The Revenant.
So they submitted it?
Yes.
As a comedy?
Yes, they did.
They can submit. You can submit to the Golden Globes?
You could submit, and you could just – like the Golden Globes, for example, decided that, no, Alicia Vikander is not supporting. They put her up rightly for lead. I don't know why they didn't see that with The Martian, but there you have it.
Best Supporting Actor nominees include Christian Bale for The Big Short, Tom Hardy, The Revenant, Mark Ruffalo, Spotlight, Mark Rylance, Bridge of Spies, and Sylvester Stallone for Creed. And he's the only nominee from Creed, as you pointed out earlier.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Mark Ruffalo said at one point that he might boycott the Oscars because of the slighting of black actors. Don't know whether he will or not, but is that smart?
I think it would make a bigger statement if a nominee decided not to go for that reason. I think that would send as opposed to, we keep pointing out Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith because they were the most vocal. But if Will Smith was like, well, I'm not going to go this year. It's like, well, you didn't get nominated. So I understand. But
he's not the front runner. So, you know, if Stallone had said he'd do that, then there might be more.
Very true. But if they cut to the audience and Ruffalo's not there and he makes it clear that he's not there for this reason, I think that that sends a pretty strong message.
If enough people know.
Just like Marlon Brando not coming because he was supporting the Native Americans.
But he was expected to win. So that was, you know, then everybody was sort of wondering what will happen if and when he wins and doesn't accept.
Let's go back to Best Supporting Actor. Are these the right nominees for that
category? No, I think this is like a – there were so many better performances. I think the only one I really liked was Mark Ruffalo's in Spotlight. I think Michael Keaton from Spotlight should have been up, frankly, and a few other people.
Well, you think – and once again, you agree on this, but you have different people in each category. Who should win in your mind?
I picked Ruffalo just because he's from Spotlight. If it were me, all five nominees in this category would have come from that film because I just think the ensemble is that strong and it's really hard to pick anyone out of that ensemble and put them above the other. I like Keaton a lot. I like Liev Schreiber a lot in that film. It just feels like the campaign is swinging towards Stallone. It's going to be a Lifetime Achievement Award, sort of.
Yeah, well, I said, who should win?
Sorry.
And you agree with that, that Mark Ruffalo should.
Yeah, out of this lot, yeah, definitely.
But you think that Sylvester Stallone, both of you think Sylvester Stallone will win. And you're sighing so deeply there. Why?
Well, I mean, you know, he's good in this role. I'm not denying that. I just think it's one of those that they're going to reward him for a lifetime of movies. And it's like – but his lifetime of movies is like Rhinestone and Cobra and Rambo 3. So I'm not really sure what they're rewarding.
I'm glad you said that because I kind of got that impression too and I thought, why? He's done two movies, Rocky and this one.
Right.
I mean I've forgotten all the other ones because, you know –
And that's not necessarily to say that it's set in stone. But a lot of times, you know – as you mentioned, there are 15 or 20 award shows that lead up to this one, and when someone starts picking up all of them, it's...
Now, Mark Rylance has won a few for Bridge of Spies, so if there's an upset, it'd be him, but
correct.
I'm taking Stallone.
Yeah, and I don't know if Stallone, like you said, I don't know if he has that sort of cachet where everyone's like, well, we missed him so many times.
Let's, exactly.
Let's get him this time, because he should have won for Demolition Man.
So the Academy's going to be soft-hearted and pick Sylvester Stallone. When we come back, we'll talk about Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Director, Best Picture. And just because Sean is here and he loves animated films, we'll talk about the best animated film of the year as well. It's our annual Oscars show as we handicap the winners and losers. By the way, is your track record pretty good?
When you look back? Terrible.
Terrible.
Oh, terrible. Don't listen to us.
Then why are you here? Coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and A Sign of the Times, 16th Annual Black History Production featuring The Impressions, Saturday, March 19th, 3 and 7 p.m. at CPCC's Pease Auditorium. Tickets available at asignofthetimes.org. And Novant Health Cancer Care, providing customized treatment plans and a team of doctors, nurses, and specialists to help give patients the support they need. Information available at novanthealth.org/cancer. Apple says that unlocking that San Bernardino shooter's iPhone would set a dangerous precedent. The FBI says new encryption technologies harm efforts to solve crimes. So on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, a look at the escalating fight over privacy and national security. Want to join our conversation? Now's the time. All you have to do is join us at charlottetalks at WFAE.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook or join us at charlottetalks on Twitter. We're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
He says thousands more Syrians have fled their homes.
They have the sadness in their eyes. They suffer a lot, and I am one of them.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
North Carolinians may have to wait until June, possibly later, before they could vote in a congressional primary.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, along with Sean O'Connell from CinemaBlend.com. He's the movie content director there and a reviewer for Channel 36, NBC6, WCNC-TV. Matt Brunson, film reviewer for Creative Loafing. And although Sean said his record at picking the winners in the Oscars is not so good, Matt, he says,
yes,
is great at this.
I used to be good like in the 50s and 60s. I've kind of petered off since.
What were you, three in the 50s and 60s?
I'm older than the Academy.
Now, the Academy builds the television show so that Best Picture is the final nominee. It chaps the evening off. But it goes Best Actress, Best Actor, Best Director, Best Picture. We're going to thwart convention and go with, go with Best Actor before Best Actress, just to show that we support the boycott. Best Actor nominees are Bryan Cranston from Trumbo, Matt Damon, The Martian, Leonardo DiCaprio, The Revenant, Michael Fassbender, Steve Jobs, and Eddie Redmayne, The Danish Girl. This sounds to me like it is an incredibly difficult category to pick.
It should be.
It's the easiest, actually.
Yeah, if only because they all deserve to be there for various reasons. But the cards are lining up in DiCaprio's favor. And this one, to me, is the only lock of the evening. And again, this is an example of, like Stallone, but way more worthy, someone who's been overlooked far too many times. And it's almost become a running joke. Like, is DiCaprio ever going to win? How much pain does he have to put himself through physically and emotionally to win the Oscar?
You set off the air, right award, wrong film.
Yes, I would have given it to him for something much earlier than this. And if he had won earlier than this, I'm not quite sure that he would. He may be nominated, but I don't think he'd be the front runner for
this film. If he'd already had his Oscar, forget it. Have you guys seen the app thing, though, where it's like Leonardo DiCaprio running through obstacles to grab that Oscar?
Yes.
It's funny. You have him like press buttons and he's jumping over like Lady Gaga and all to get there.
But it's sad that that's become the narrative for him of he's yet to win, and let's just give it to him. But there was another.
Why hasn't he won? That's another thing about the sausage being made. Why hasn't he won? Because he's a great actor.
He is. It's, you know, a lot of times it's who you're up against. I mean, a lot of people loved in Wolf of Wall Street, but so many people love Matthew McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club. So it's not. I don't know if he's ever won to somebody who gave a really weak performance. It was just better competition.
In years past, I don't think he campaigns quite as hard for it.
This year, no.
No. Oh, this year he's out shaking everyone's hand. I think it's been hard to get him to come back to Los Angeles, you know, to work the circuit, which takes a very long time. Uh-huh. And Leonardo DiCaprio's personal life is a lot more exciting than going to Oscar luncheons, and so why would he?
But you said you just don't see actors with enough backing or passion to knock Leonardo DiCaprio out of contention. What does that mean?
Let's use Eddie Redmayne as an example. He won. Uh-huh. He just won last year,
right.
And I think he gives a tremendous performance in Danish Girl, but the sad fact is that counts against him. Some voters will look and just say, well, he just won, so we're not going to get, oh, he's young, he'll have another chance or something like that. Or they'll look at The Martian. That's too commercial, you know, although Matt Damon carried that film for the most part.
Well, and Trumbo, I think, would have been better received and had been up for more awards than just Bryan Cranston. Right. I think that might be a challenge. But.
If DiCaprio wins, how much of it is because of this performance or because they feel that they have slighted him all these years versus his willingness to endure the harsh realities of making this film, which were brutal? And Hollywood loves to give awards for best actor for people who put on makeup.
Oh, this they love it.
This is not makeup. This is, he was out there freezing his you-know-what off.
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
yes.
But they make it, this narrative is just absurd because they make it sound like this is the first difficult production shoot in Hollywood history. There's been other films just as difficult to make, but they're really running with this one. I mean, even Mad Max, their ad campaign is now kind of going like, actually, our movie was harder to make because, you know, they were out in the desert smashing vehicles for months and months on end. So it's an absurd narrative, but it's one that seems to be working in his favor and the film's favor in general.
So despite the fact that both of you believe Leonardo DiCaprio will win the Oscar for Best Actor, you differ on who you think should win. Mm-hmm. Matt, you think Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, mm-hmm. and Sean, you think that Eddie Redmayne should win for The Danish Girl.
Correct. Now, Trumbo was Matt's number one film of the year, and I do think that Cranston is very good in it.
That's because he's a writer.
Did you like Redmayne in Danish Girl?
He's the one I would have bumped out of the five.
Interesting. Sure. For who? Anyone in particular? Mm-hmm. Can you think of anyone who should have been in?
Speaking of Oscars, so white, Chiwetel Ejiofor and the little scene Secret in Their Eyes I thought was terrific.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. I thought Johnny Depp had a chance for Black Mask.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Maybe if we have time, we'll talk about the slights, too. Best Actress, the nominees, Cate Blanchett for Carol, Brie Larson for Room, Jennifer Lawrence for Joy, Charlotte Rampling, 45 years, and say it for me, please.
Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse. Which doesn't look a thing like it's been.
No.
Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn. All of these nominees seem to be from small films that really haven't been seen by the movie-going public at large, have they?
No, not in general.
No, that's true.
Is that unusual?
No, not for actress. Not for actress.
Because they get more challenging, interesting, deeper roles than men?
Usually. I mean, if you look over the last few years especially, the lead actors are usually in the movies that are up for Best Picture, whereas actresses are in just small independent movies. This year's a little different since Room and Brooklyn are both up.
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely
– Why is that?
Again, I think it has to do with, 74% of the Academy membership is male, so they're going to feel more for a movie like, you know, The Revenant than they did like for Wild last year with Reese Witherspoon.
Hmm. Okay, so the person you think should win, Best Actress, you don't agree on this, so tell me who you think
should win. We rarely agree, Mike, as you've seen.
He just hasn't caught up to me yet, so we don't agree that much.
So, Sean, you think the woman whose name I still can't pronounce.
Correct. Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan.
Although, honestly, I could
have
made a
case. For those who don't know how Saoirse is spelled, S-A-O-I-R-S-E.
I would win a spelling bee if I were up there and that was presented to me.
So you think she should win, and you think, Matt, who should win?
Brie Larson for Room. But Saoirse Ronan would be, you know, right up there too. It's a great category,
Those are
five great performances. Charlotte Rampling hurt her case by saying that the Academy was being racist towards whites this year. That certainly didn't win her any favors with anybody. But for the performances alone, all five are terrific.
And Jennifer Lawrence, I thought she was really good in Joy. Joy is a film that nobody saw, and it has a lot of problems. But she's becoming suddenly the person that the Academy just nominates because she showed up in a film. Mm-hmm. So they like her being
like
at the
ceremony. Meryl Streep, amazing.
Similar. She's on a track for that, yes.
And so you think Brie Larson will win. Both of you think this.
I think so,
For Room, a movie that how many people saw? 10, 15, 20?
20 at most.
It's sad. It's really good.
Let's see. Best Director, Adam McKay, The Big Short, George Miller, Mad Max, Fury Road, Alejandro
Iñárritu
for The Revenant, Lenny Abramson for Room, and Tom McCarthy for Spotlight. Iñárritu won last year for Birdman. Would it be unprecedented for a director to win twice in a row?
It would be the third time.
The third time?
Yes.
But it's typically reserved for...
Well, it was John Ford and Joseph L. Mankiewicz who won before.
Wow. Powerhouse. A long time, yeah.
Yeah, powerhouses.
And Matt, you think that George Miller should win for Mad Max. Why?
Yeah, this 70-year-old filmmaker going back to the series that launched his career, and he made a movie that I think is the best in the series, and it's just an incredible feat. This whole movie, just the whole look of it, the pace of it. To me, he's out of these nominees, he's the easy choice.
And you agree. Do you think he should win as well?
I think he should win, and Matt knows I'm not a fan of this film. So the fact that I recognize the amount of work, the degree of difficulty that went into pulling off Mad Max probably should earn him the director Oscar. And in this year in particular, I think it's okay to split. Mm-hmm. Like quite often director and picture should line up. But the way that the Best Picture nominees are, I think it'd be okay to recognize Miller and then go in a different direction for picture.
And that is why the two of you have split on who you think will win. Matt, you think that George Miller will win.
No, he thinks
George Miller. Sean, you think he will win.
I think he will.
For Mad Max.
I think he'll get enough support from the directors who vote in this category who will appreciate what he pulled off. Although I think you can make the same case for Iñárritu for The Revenant because we talked about how difficult that shoot is, but he just won.
But he did win the Director's Guild again.
He did.
And you think he will win?
I think he will. Is that because
of the difficulty of making this
film? No, I think it's just because there's a whole thing of just buzz and momentum, and you know, even though the awards have been split up all throughout the season, lately the big ones have been won by The Revenant, and I think that just may continue the trend.
Were you stunned that Spielberg didn't get into this category?
Not really.
Really? Yeah. I just figured that they love him. That they just love him, and they put him in.
They don't like Spielberg, do they?
Oh!
They do. I mean, the film's up for film, but, you know, he gets nominated enough.
Let's go on to another Oscar controversy. A few years ago, they expanded the Best Picture nominees from 5 nominees to possible nominations to 10, and this year they put up 8. Should it float like this? I mean, you say, Matt, that the Academy's voting procedure for Best Picture has been poorly thought out and should be changed. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was because when they went to 10, the way they did it was they had Academy members vote for the 2 movies they liked best. So they're like, great, we can put any 10 we want. And when they did that, you had some really diverse interest in movies that otherwise wouldn't have made the cut.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way they're doing it, if you can nominate between 5 and 10, their ballots only have 5 now instead of 10. So they're going to go back to just voting like they did before.
All right, explain this. Each individual voter gets a ballot with 5 possible things.
Slots, yes, as opposed to 10.
And out of that, they extrapolate up to 10
possible nominees.
Yes,
they add up all the
numbers. How do they do that?
They add up all the numbers. They've said they've had some magic threshold that shows the point system of when it used to be 5 nominees. Any movie that gets over that value is how many gets nominated. That's why it fluctuates between 5 and 10.
So they use an algorithm.
Basically. But by doing that, they've gone back to more conservative choices because with only 5 slots instead of 10, they're not going to recognize, you know, out there movies like Inception or Toy Story 3, which is really sad because those 2 years they did that, it really expanded it.
Now, I'm told, Sean, that when you picked the 10 best films of 2016,
yes,
you included all of the 8 that the Academy chose. They left out Carol and Straight Outta Compton.
Right.
Had you only chosen 8, would you have left those movies out as well?
Yes, I would have.
You would have left Carol out? You drunk?
Carol is really good. Carol is really good, and it's interesting because I would go the other way. I would love 3 Best Picture nominees, like by the time you get to the race. Because then if you only give the people 3 to vote for, you'll have a better representation, I think, of what is the best film. I think when you have 8, it splits the focus too much. And films that I think we could argue that Room and Brooklyn, as good as they are, have no chance of winning, right?
Yeah.
So the only benefit they get is they can call themselves Best Picture nominees. But what does that amount to anymore? We talked earlier that doesn't really amount to anything that much anymore.
But for the filmmakers, it does. I mean, like them and for Winner's Bone. I mean, these movies would never have made the cut. I think it's great that really good movies that wouldn't have made it. I mean, believe me, I'd like to go back to the 5 system. But if the choice is 5, 10, or a fluctuating number, get rid of the fluctuating number and either go with 5 or 10.
Then in that case, I'd go 5, I guess. I like to keep it 5.
So here are the 8 Best Picture nominees. The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight. I notice a key omission here. Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yes, very true. Good point. Not through lack of trying on Disney's part. I mean, they wanted that Best Picture nomination.
I mean, not even an actor nomination for Mark Hamill. I mean, what?
Yeah. So
the only nomination that it got was for John Williams and his original score.
Well, I got five, but it was all technical.
Yeah. So why? I mean, it's the highest grossing film of all time, isn't it?
No. Avatar is still a higher grossing film.
Well, no, stateside it is the highest grossing of all time. Just globally it's not.
Well, for a lot of different reasons. It didn't start screening for people until, 2 weeks before the cutoff is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I think the Academy felt that they recognized the blockbuster, the crowd pleaser, both in The Martian and Mad Max. So they probably didn't feel the need to include another sci-fi blockbuster that garnered a lot of cash necessarily. And maybe they just didn't feel like it's a Best Picture candidate. That's okay too.
So of these eight films, you don't agree on this at all in this category. Who should win the Best Picture, Matt? Who should
win? Like Sean, who's vying for Academy membership, only four of these made my top ten. And out of those four, since Carol and Trumbo aren't up, Mad Max Fury Road would be my favorite, although Spotlight wouldn't be far behind. I just think that, action films, science fiction, fantasy films are always denigrated, especially in the Academy's eyes. And here's one that I think just blows away all expectations, and I just think it should win.
Okay. And you think?
I went with Spotlight. And Spotlight was my number one film of the year. It's a film that gets better every time I watch it. From start to finish, everything about it is near perfect. I mean, the cast is incredible. The script is great. It's a very important topic. It's a difficult film to get through because of the subject
matter.
This
is about the Boston Globe's investigation into the Catholic Church and the sexual abuse allegations in Boston.
Correct. And it's possible that because I work in the field of journalism that it struck me in a different way. But the way that they craft the story, it's just, to me, so compelling.
Well, Tim Funk was on this program yesterday, and off the air he said, that's a movie that got the business right. He said it shows how our business works.
Right.
It's accurate to that degree, and it's an important film because of what it says.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But you still think that it's not going to win.
No, sadly. I hope it has a chance, but I don't think it's going to. If only because we've seen the progression, the momentum get behind other films leading up to this.
So you think, and you're split on this. I'm going to nail you down.
Yes.
Because you think The Big Short or The Revenant will win. Pick one.
It's a coin toss, but if forced to choose, I'll say The Big Short.
Then you don't agree with Matt at all.
No.
No, I think it's a Revenant. It's the worst review to the eight Best Picture nominees, but it has all the momentum right now, and that's going to take it over.
Well, I wanted to talk about some things that are in the theaters. You think that Johnny Depp got snubbed. You think that Star Wars got snubbed. You think Ridley Scott got snubbed. But I wanted to talk about Deadpool, Hail Caesar, and Nate Parker's The Birth of a Nation, even Zoolander 2, which also got snubbed. But we don't have time. Sean O'Connor from CinemaBlend.com, Matt Brunson from Creative Loafing. Thank you both very much.
Charlotte